Welcome to the Consumerism Commentary Podcast. I'm Tom Dubek. On today's podcast, I talked to Aloisa, founder of the personal finance website My Broken Coin, about her mother becoming a mail order bride. Welcome to the Consumerism Commentary Podcast. I'm Tom Dubek. Today's guest is Aloisa, founder of the personal finance website My Broken Coin. Aloisa, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Aloisa, you recently wrote a series of articles about how your mother came to America in a somewhat unconventional, although not uncommon, way. So tell me what your mother did to come to America.
My mother was a mail order bride.
Now, I imagine the decision to become a mail order bride can't be an easy one, and I'm guessing that your mother was going through a rather difficult time during this period to make that call. So what was your family life like when she had made this decision?
It was happening in 1992-1993. The Soviet Union collapsed, I believe, in 1991. So, and Lithuania, that's where I'm from, declared independence even before the Soviet Union collapsed. So the economic conditions in the country were pretty grim, and our living situation, our financial situation, was pretty grim as well. My mother was a teacher and a single mother raising her daughter, me, and we lived on a very small teacher's salary. And it was not enough to pay for the utilities because the prices were really sky high back then. So we were struggling. We didn't have enough to pay for utilities, such as water, heating. And we were pretty much losing our apartment because we were so behind in our payments. So yes, our financial situation contributed to my mother's decision to list herself as a mail order bride.
Okay. Now, yeah, I can imagine that to willingly uproot yourself from the country you love to start all over again in another country has to take a lot of courage, and especially with a spouse you hardly know. So, I mean, how does a person go about making themselves available as a bride? Did your mother consider this the last resort at the time?
Well, life can be very complicated when you find yourself without money, without future, and without means of support. So people do tend to make drastic decisions in difficult financial situations. So it wasn't the last resort, but it was, I think, close to being one.
Mm-hmm.
I think a marriage as an economic arrangement, as a way out of a difficult financial situation, is a thought that a person might consider when this person is drowning. But actually, yes, it requires a lot of courage. And my mother was really brave. Because you never know if it's the right decision or if it's not. But actually, it was my grandfather who suggested the idea. He saw a small ad in the newspaper, because back then we didn't have the internet. So everything was on the paper. So it was in the newspaper, and he suggested my mom to apply. So she thought about it a few days, and then she said, okay, well, why not? I don't have anything to lose. So she just wrote a letter, her short bio. She described herself, her interests, her goals, what she was looking for in the partner, sent her picture, and she was listed in the catalog. It was a paper catalog also, because about a month later, we started getting letters from different American men.
Now, what kind of risks are involved in doing this? I mean, aside from, not even getting to the full dating and when you actually set up dating with it, but I mean, like, there has to be other risks involved with this. I mean, you're putting yourself out there for two groups of people, basically saying, look, I'm interested in becoming a bride.
Yes. Well, the risks actually for women are huge from my perspective, because you can marry a man whom you don't know. You might meet him once or twice, maybe three times the most, and you don't know this person. And then you move to the country and you don't speak the language. You can't work. You can't drive a car. So if you do find yourself in an abusive relationship, it's very difficult to get out of it because not a lot of women actually know that they do have rights in the United States, even though they are here on a fiancé visa, or I don't know what other types of visas would be there, but they do have rights. So, but they're scared to report abuse because they don't speak the language. So they don't have this ability to communicate.
Understood, understood. Now, was there any cost to your mother when she got set up to become a mail order bride?
No, it didn't cost us anything financially. Emotionally, yes, definitely.
Yeah.
Mostly the cost was on men. It was passed over to them because, well, women in the post-Soviet Union countries in the Eastern Bloc, we couldn't afford much. We couldn't afford to buy a ticket and fly all the way to the United States. Americans could do that, American men. So they had to pay $5, I believe back then it was $5, to get an address, to write a letter. There was no internet communication. It was all old-fashioned way through the mail.
Right. Well, yeah, don't feel so bad. 1992, nobody else had the internet either, so that's good.
Okay. Well, that's so, and I believe it was about $5, as far as I remember. So they would go through the catalog and they'd be pick a woman or several women they're interested, and they would pay a certain amount, get the address, and then if they decide to come and meet, they would have to come and be on women's turf. So they would have to fly all over. So mostly it would be, all the cost was on American men.
I can imagine, too, that when they came over, I'm guessing this wasn't just really to see one person. They would probably have to go through multiple potential brides at once, too. It's like if you're going to make that effort to come fly over to another country, you might as well see as many of them as you can.
Yes, because when you spend so much money, yes, you want to get the most value out of what you spend. So it was very common that the man would choose up to 5, 6, as far as I know, women, and a person would fly over and would make different stops and sometimes in different countries or in the same country, just different towns to meet women.
Yeah, some sort of international speed dating then. That's kind of...
And that's exactly what it was, yes.
Now, what did your mother go through, though, through this dating process? I mean, like, what kind of men, through your observations, did you see who were really the kind of people who solicit mail order brides?
My observations are very objective and totally based on my personal opinion. What I observed through the communication and through reading letters, I think there were men, and that was the majority of them, who were disappointed in their relationships with American women, and they started to branch out to foreign countries in search of something special. There were also men who thought that they could acquire cheap household labor because they knew that our countries are not doing so well, so it was understood that one of the reasons women are looking abroad for their husbands was financial situations. So they tried to use it to their advantage to acquire cheap household labor, who also, along with cooking and cleaning and laundry, would provide sex. There were also men, I think, who who thought that it would be easier to dominate poor foreign women, for the same reasons I just mentioned. However, they would try to mask it a little bit, and they would provide a long explanation of a traditional marriage they're looking to find. And also, I believe that there were men that were seeking a non-traditional marriage that included extra partners. I don't want to go too much into the details. It was something that was quite insane.
A little bit uncomfortable, I could see that.
Right. And also there were men who were just shy and not comfortable in a wide variety of social settings. So they just choose. It was easier for them to talk to women through correspondence, through letters first, before meeting face to face. So that's my observations. They're okay. Very objective. I'm not trying to generalize because I'm sure there are other men who are looking for foreign brides for different reasons.
Right, right. And I could see most of the guys I know fitting in a lot of these categories. Not necessarily the intent to, I guess you'd say, dominate or take advantage of foreign women, but pretty much any woman. And they can act like this in any relationship. So, yeah, don't feel so bad. That's a typical, like I said, I can see a lot of guys doing this. Now, how much of this dating did your mom do before the right match was made?
She did some dating. It wasn't a lot. it might sound a lot from my categorizing men into different types. She did some dating. She met some men. And there was a lot of letters also going back and forth.
Well, was she able to kind of sort out a lot of, like, you know, you had these five categories that you mentioned here. Mm-hmm. Was she able to filter out a lot of these people just through the correspondence that was going back and forth?
Yes, you would be surprised what people sometimes write in the second or third letter. And or sometimes it just you can just read between the lines.
Okay, so how much dating was she doing?
What do you mean, how much?
Well, I mean, how many times did you really go out and actually see different people? Like, you know, once she got past the initial rounds of correspondence and somebody would actually fly out to come see her, about how many times did that happen that she had these face-to-face meetings with people?
I believe it was about 3 or 4.
You were touching on this before about the risks, about how, you know, basically what's involved with this. And, you know, if you're not really filtering out and getting the right person and agreeing to, you know, change your life and go overseas with this person, you know, you could really find yourself in a lot of trouble. I mean, what would happen to a mail order bride if they did get married, go overseas, and they found themselves in a situation they want to get out of? What would happen if something didn't work out?
Well, it depends, of course, on the man they're with. But if mm-hmm. it doesn't work out, well, a man can choose to pay for the divorce and send his wife back home.
Does she have that option?
Yes, of course. She will have to go back home. Even if they didn't get married, let's say she came here on a fiancé visa mm-hmm. and it's not working out, she can still go home. The question is, will she have means to pay for her ticket back home if her husband or future husband or that man is willing to pay for her ticket back home?
Now, just to go off that for a second there, I mean, is it possible, it would even be recommended for mail order brides to try to, once they're in the country, try to work to become an American citizen in order to stay in the country for just that reason, so that if it doesn't work out and, you know, they just have to go and find an apartment somewhere and start their life over, it doesn't necessarily involve having to go all the way back to the country they started.
To become an American citizen, it's not that easy. It takes time. It takes years. And first of all, you have to be legal mm-hmm. to be here, to even have a future of becoming an American citizen. So if a mail order bride, she got married, she is a wife, she does not automatically become an American citizen. It takes time.
How much time does it usually take to become an American citizen?
I believe if you're married to an American, you came here, let's say, on a fiancé visa, you get married in the country or outside, it takes you at least 2 years to get a permanent green card. At least that's how it was years ago. I don't know what could have changed since then, but just to get a permanent green card, it takes 2 years, and then I believe it takes another 3 or 5, but don't quote me on that, to become a citizen.
Okay.
But green card gives you a lot of rights. So a lot of women might just think, I'll just stick it out for the next 2 years somehow, just to get that permanent green card, and then I can move on.
And take it from there.
Yes, and that happens.
So now, how did your mom find her eventual American husband?
Well, it was, again, thanks to my grandfather, because my mom, actually, she was at the point where she decided to give up on the whole idea, because it can be emotionally draining. And I think my grandfather, he just liked the letters that this man was writing, and he just talked my mom into just giving this one last chance to this man. And she said, okay, because I think she did, deep down, she did like his letters too, but she was just tired of the whole process. And maybe at this point she was losing hope.
Uh-huh.
So, and she decided to give him a chance. She did. He came over. And I think it was important for her that he was coming just to see her. He didn't choose 5 or 6 women to fly and see on the same trip. He just decided to stay with us. Well, we invited him to stay, and he accepted the invitation. And it was just him getting to know the family, getting to know my mother.
Yeah, that's kind of funny, too, because I found this funny. I was reading the article, and it always seems like that a lot of times with relationships, where it's like when you just give up. You know, sometimes you're in the dating scene for a while, and then you just get so flustered, and you just give up on it. You get tired of it. You see, now I've had enough of this, to hell with it all. And then suddenly something pops up when you least expect it. It's kind of funny like that, too. And I also like the fact that your mother was, you know, I'm reading your articles and you're going through how your mother was pretty much, when he had come over, your mother was, just like you said, she was kind of at the end of her rope, and she was flustered, she was frustrated, and she really was almost like putting on no pretenses. Like, she was just being, I guess, it sounded like she was being very abrupt, very direct with them. So it was almost like she was basically giving him, like, look, here's who I am. I'm not going to put on any false pretenses because I'm done with this. You're pretty much my last hope. And yet he found the charm in your mother to make the match work.
I think that's how it is in real life.
Yeah.
When you stop trying to impress somebody, and when you just show who you are, who you really are, then it all just falls into places.
Yeah, and a lot of times, you know, people who, yeah, obviously kids don't get that, you know, and I guess a lot of us still don't get that, you know, in our older ages, but, you know, you spend so much time trying to impress people, but it really comes down to being yourself in a relationship, because, you know, you could spend all this time trying to put on a false face, and, you know, in the end, if they wind up marrying somebody who it really isn't the person that you're letting on yourself to be, then you're going to be disappointed.
Right. And I think that's probably a reason why so many marriages just don't make it. And it doesn't matter if it's a male order bride marriage or it's with someone you just met in the library.
So tell me about his stay there in Lithuania when he came over. I understand that there was a little bit of mistrust there on both sides.
Well, yes. And he chose a very bad time of the year to come. He tried to save money on off-season travel. So
and then he found out why it was off season, right?
Right. Well, we do have season travel. It's usually in the summer, but he came in February. It was really cold and icy. It was really miserable weather. And because of the economic conditions, the heating was almost non-existent. So it was pretty cold. And hot water was in very scarce supply. But he just decided to come, and we offered him to stay in our place, which is a very small apartment, and it's very old Soviet type apartment. So it's very different probably from what he'd seen in the United States. I'm sure he was shocked when he saw it. And because we didn't know him, he was a complete stranger. We didn't trust him, even though we suggested to stay. And I think for him, he was taking a huge risk too, flying all the way across the ocean, staying in a country that he've never been before, doesn't know much about it, with people he've never met who barely can even speak two words of his language. So he was taking a huge risk too. So yes, there was some tension.
And not only that too, we have to remember that the year in which this happened, we're talking about 1992, right?
Right.
I mean, this, we're talking about the fall of the Soviet Union, and, you know, the Cold War between the United States and the Soviet Union was still fresh. You know, and there, like you had mentioned, there's a lot of mistrust. It's like suddenly he's flying over to the Soviet Union. You know, does he trust these people? And do you guys trust him?
Right.
You know, all these years of, you know, kind of being shown, like, you know, we're enemies and blah, blah, blah. You know, you're expecting the worst out of these people coming over.
I don't think we expected the worst. I think we didn't expect anything. We were just cautious. And because at this point, my mom didn't have any expectations. On his part, I don't know. I think there was curiosity. He was also cautious, and I'm sure.
Well, I think you said that he didn't sleep much those first few nights. He wasn't too sure if he'd wind up being have a knife in his throat or something like that because he didn't know what he was getting into.
Right. He was listening to the sounds, I'm sure. So so did we.
Yeah, right. Exactly. The feeling was mutual, right?
Right. But then when you get to know each other and you spend more time, you get to discover this person that is staying with you. And even though I didn't like him in the very beginning, I think I was also emotionally tired. And somehow it all worked out. He just grew on me. And I think we just found a common language, even though we didn't speak English very well.
So how does the story end with your mom and your stepfather? Are they still together?
Yes, they're still together. She left Lithuania, I believe, in 1993 or 1994, and she never looked back. 20 years later, they're still together, happy, going strong. So I guess love, after all, can always find a way.
There you go. And now you didn't go with her, though, right? I mean, you were a student at the time.
I was, yes. I stayed. I stayed because education was important for me, and plus, it's free. It was free back then.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I was working on my bachelor's, then I was working on my master's, and I was at the point of having my own life too. So for me, it was just not the right time to go.
So now how about you now, Aloisa? I mean, how did you wind up coming to America?
Well, I came to the United States in 2000. I just reunited with my mom. She was waiting for me, and we were finally able to reunite as a family.
Did you guys see each other? Like, did she ever happen to fly back over? Or was that like about 7, 8 years since you had guys had seen each other?
Yes, she actually, they both came and visited us. And I also had a chance to fly over here and visit her.
Oh, very good. So at least it wasn't like a hard 7 years that you guys had gone without seeing each other.
No, it wasn't.
Well, now, you know, seeing communism fall and the birth of capitalism in Lithuania and then coming to America, I mean, how has this affected your view on personal finances? I mean, I was reading your article and you're talking about things about how it was really weird, you know, in the Soviet Union where everything was either free or extremely cheap to suddenly when capitalism started up there, it's like you had to go and pay for everything, which was a huge a huge shock for you. So how has this had an effect on how you treat money?
You know, honestly, it didn't have a very good effect on me. Back home, well, I was born in the Soviet Union, so mm-hmm. we didn't have much, and our stores didn't look the way American stores look, mm-hmm. and material things were not important. So when the Soviet Union collapsed and then Lithuania became independent, we were going through a lot of economic and financial struggles as the country, as the whole. So we definitely were not thinking about material goods at this point. We were barely like, you were thinking about, okay, how much money do I have left to buy food and to pay for the apartment? So our priorities were very different. But when I moved to the United States and I saw the abundance of goods and material things, it took me a while actually to get over the idea that if I go to the store the next day, I still will see all these goods available. But I have to go and grab them right now because probably next day they will be gone. It took me a while to get over that. Mm-hmm. But then I just became a consumer. That's what happened to me. I got attached to the material things. And the more I was making money, the more I was spending. So I went from...
Welcome to America.
From one extreme of struggling to make the ends meet to another extreme. And that was one of the reasons I started my blog, My Broken Coin, because I had to admit to myself pretty much in public that I do have a spending problem. And I'm working on it because I really don't like myself right now much. I want to go back to my old self. And
are you in a lot of debt right now, or have you found yourself in a lot of debt, or is it just the spending habits?
Well, that's another thing. We didn't have credit cards back home. When I was leaving Lithuania, credit cards were just coming into the country. Banks were just introducing credit to the businesses only. Individuals didn't have this chance yet. Now it's all different. But back then, when I came here, I was like, oh, look at these credit cards. And my first credit card I got, I remember it was $500 limit. And I was working as an intern and making maybe like $6 an hour. And I was able to get $500 limit credit card. So for me, it was like, look, I can go shopping. I can, besides the textbooks, I can buy something.
You're probably thinking, are these people crazy? They're trusting me with $500?
I know. So, and from there, it just escalated. It became worse and worse. So the more I started to make money, the more I started to spend, and not just cash. I would go deeper into the debt. So now I'm trying to get out of debt and to get out of this consumer me, go back to my old myself, if it makes sense.
I feel bad. It's like America has just poisoned you.
It didn't poison me. It just showed me the other side of finances.
Well, Eloise, I'm going to call it a wrap on that note. Once again, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. It was a great pleasure.
That was Eloise, founder of the personal finance website, My Broken Coin. You can visit My Broken Coin by going to mybrokencoin.com. This is Tom Zubak, and thanks for joining us in the Consumerism Commentary Podcast.
Thanks for listening to today's episode of the Consumerism Commentary Podcast. We welcome your feedback. Please email us at podcast@consumerismcommentary.com. To subscribe to the podcast or to listen to this or other episodes, visit us at consumerismcommentary.com/pod or search for Consumerism Commentary on iTunes. The Consumerism Commentary Podcast is hosted and produced by Tom Dubek, Brian J. Bush, and Luke Landis. The music is composed and performed by Mindcube. The podcast was founded by Luke Landis.